This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is always the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North for the week of December the 1st, 2014, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television from north and south of the 49th parallel. I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Diane Wild.
And I'm Greg David.
And we would like you to put your television on mute for episode 171 of TVA, the podcast. Oh, Diane, I can't wait to hear about the boobies that you saw.
I saw so many boobies. It was so exciting.
And I've seen no pictures of these boobies.
I posted lots of pictures of the boobies.
Oh, those boobies. I think I'm sorry.
You might be looking for something.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no.
Are there any strip clubs on the Galapagos Islands?
Not that I came across.
Because I would just think that, you know, there's a great marketing opportunity right there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. They plaster the booby thing everywhere. I had a drink called a blue-footed booby, and there was one called the red-footed booby, too, which I didn't actually see red-footed booby, so I wasn't...
Oh.
I couldn't have the drink red-footed booby, because, you know, we didn't...
I don't know why we would even talk about it anymore if you haven't seen the red-footed boobies, to be honest with you.
I saw so many blue-footed boobies, though. It was so exciting.
My dreams are shattered, to be honest with you.
I brought one home with me, actually.
You brought a blue-footed booby home with you?
I mean, it might have been a stuffed animal, but yes, I did bring one.
She brought the carcass of a blue-footed booby and had it stuffed.
It was alive when I packed it in my suitcase.
They have rules about these things, otherwise I totally would have. And the giant tortoise, too, I would have brought one of those home, too, because it's so cute. And the sea lions were so cute, and they were everywhere. And iguanas were everywhere.
Welcome home, Diane.
Thank you.
Welcome back to reality.
I know.
I'm still
adjusting.
But then you're leaving again tomorrow.
I know. It's kind of a crazy month for me. Yes, I'm leaving tomorrow to go to the Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
Diane's flying to Mars.
I am. I'm going to hitch a ride. It's a test flight, actually. They're not actually sending people this time, but I figure if I hitch a ride, I'll just stay until they finally do send people up.
Diane's going to plant a blue-footed booby on the Mars.
Ooh. You've given me an idea.
I think so. Uh-huh.
So, how have you guys been?
You know, we've been trying to cope without you. It hasn't been easy. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
No. Anthony said swear words when you weren't here.
Anthony?
I did say a swear word. I said a swear.
I think that's only the second time in the entire time.
I know. I did say one on the previous, the almost last episode, that fake last episode that we had. I think I swore on that.
Yeah.
And then
you've been biting your tongue for so many years, and you just finally cracked it.
I can't swear around you, Diane. You intimidate me too much.
Oh, right. My delicate ears couldn't handle it.
We do have several stories to talk to you about this week. As we are kind of in this, there's not necessarily a lot of show news. There's some show news. It's not like we're creeping back on some show news again, because we went through about a month where there was precious little show news to talk about. But we've got some stuff that we're going to talk about, so hopefully you will you'll find some stuff in there. But we're also going to talk about some of the business, the industry side, you know, the stuff that we tend to sink our teeth into and talk for far too long about. But before we get there, I know that Diane's forgotten about this part of the show, but it is time for the beverage update.
Are you kidding me? I actually, on holidays, I was taking pictures of a lot of my beverages, but I don't think I posted most of them because I thought it was such an inside joke that other people would think I was crazy.
So you took pictures for yourself is what you're saying?
Well, no. I think I posted one, but I posted a picture of the blue-footed booby and the red-footed booby drinks, and then I had all these other pictures, and then I was kind of like, oh, I don't think I have the guts to post them. But yeah, anyway, so what do I have? I have a sangria, one of those bottled sangria things that I keep saying I'm addicted to and then have to say, oh, I don't really mean addicted. And I have a sparkling water that is, I think it's coconut and lime, which is a little bit of an accident. I thought that
sounds
I was...
like one.
Well, yeah. Put the lime and the coconut, right? I thought I was blending, like I had a little bit left of my one drink and then I poured some more into it and I thought it was the same, but it's not the same.
So it's the Harry Nilsson sparkling water is what you're saying.
Exactly, exactly. And then I have another blend of rooibos. So I mixed O Canada, which is basically maple syrup flavored, with creme brulee, which is basically caramel flavored. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Better than the lime coconut.
Do they encourage like just free mixing of rooibos?
Free mixing of tea is a thing for sure. You make your own blends. I tend to actually just stick with the teas that I like. But in this case, I happen to have a little bit of the O Canada left and not quite enough to make a whole pot. So I put in some creme brulee.
I have to think that there's some rooibos purists out there that are just cringing right
now. They're screaming. Yeah, they're screaming.
If rooibos purists would cringe at me having flavored rooibos to begin with. Because yes. You can just have plain rooibos. You can have just plain black tea, and I tend to prefer the flavored varieties. And yeah, purists don't. I'm not a purist. Let's put it that way.
Somewhere in Johannesburg, somebody's cringing right now, Diane.
Yes, I'm the poster girl for what not to do with tea and rooibos.
It's like a PSA that they have on South African television.
Don't be like Diane.
Yes.
Yes. So what are you guys drinking?
Go ahead, Greg.
Okay. I am not drinking anything alcoholic. I've just gone with a glass of tap water through the Brita filter and into a plastic cup from IKEA.
Ooh, is it a tumbler?
I guess it would be a tumbler, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, it would be a tumbler.
I like how you have to pad the details to make water sound good.
I know. Well, I thought that I might get quizzed on that. Anthony likes to know whether it's artisanal or not. And yes. So I figured I'd throw in the Brita filter there.
Is it small batch?
It is. It's a very small batch, about a liter.
Okay.
But yeah.
That's good.
What about you, Anthony? What are you having?
I have my first Tim Hortons hot chocolate of the season.
Mm.
Yes. Okay. It was just one of those... I don't drink coffee. I don't drink tea. But when the cold whips up and I'm driving home, I do enjoy myself a hot chocolate once in a while. So, of course, at this point, it's not so hot anymore. It's kind of like cold chocolate.
Do you get a Dutchie with that? What do you get with it? Anything?
Well, I had a Dutchie, but I passed the Dutchie to the left-hand side.
So. Right, of course. You know what? I'll just serve those up to you. I don't mind at all. Underhanded.
We got to come up with a song about Toronto tap water now. Yeah. We've referenced.
You'll have to excuse me. It's just my musical youth, to be honest with you.
Oh, man.
Anyway, whew. Aren't you glad you're back, Diane?
Yeah, I was going to say, I sure miss you guys.
So we do have, as we said, some links. The first link we have is actually some news about shows. What? News about shows? So CBC is unveiling its winter schedule, re-unveiling the winter schedule that they unveiled back in the end of the summer.
But they didn't actually say it was a schedule.
No, they didn't give
shows.
Yeah, and they didn't give dates, and now we have dates.
Yeah, now we have dates.
Oh, okay.
Dates. Yeah.
So I will kick it over to either of you as to which dates we're going to hit up first. I don't know. We certainly have... some of the new stuff starting up. When does it look like? January 11th and 12th. That the first week of January looks like the big week.
Well, yeah.
Book of Negroes is January 7th, and I'm quite looking forward to that.
Right.
Yeah, and if you're in an animated frame of mind, Donald Sutherland, his animated project Pirates Passage is on January the 4th, and there actually hasn't been a lot of press about this one, but Pirates Passage is a kid's book. And Donald Sutherland jumped on board, and he's like an executive producer, and I believe he's narrating it as well. So that's going to be, you know, kicking off the new year. And then, like Diane said, the Book of Negroes is getting a lot of press, and that's going to be on January the 7th. And then Schitt's Creek, which I've seen the first couple episodes of, that is the Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy sitcom, and it's really, really funny.
Is it? Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, it is really funny. I mean, if you're into anything like Best in Show and Waiting for Guffman, that's what you're going to get. Offbeat humor that's smart. You know, there's no laugh track. You know, there's stuff going on behind the scenes, like behind the characters, that is just as funny as what's happening in front of. And hey, it has subtle humor, like the mayor of Schitt's Creek, his name is Roland Schitt. So if you're looking for highbrow humor, you're exactly. gonna get yeah, it. Yeah. Creek.
I'm hoping it does well, because I'm really dreading all the headlines if it doesn't, about, you know, CBC being up Schitt's Creek and, you know, all that. I think we've already seen those puns in headlines.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, they've set themselves up for, you know, if it's a hit, then, you know, they can say, you know, CBC is the shit, and, you know, if they're not. If it's not, then they can say the same thing. So that's coming up.
I think also just to note that if you listen to the TV ABC's podcast last week, which Benjamin Ayres was on, he actually appears in a couple of episodes of Schitt's Creek. So
everything, though. He is in everything,
I know.
I don't think he ever sleeps.
I talked to him about that on the podcast, the fact that over the past couple of years alone, like in 2013 and 2014, he has been on at least a dozen different Canadian shows.
Yeah, he's a that guy. Like, you know, anything that you see in Canada, he's in it. You're like, hey, it's that guy again.
Yeah.
So he'll be in Schitt's Creek. We've talked about Ascension. That's coming up on February the 9th. And then X Company, which is the renamed World War II drama that was originally known as Camp X, now is known as X Company, and that's going to be February the 18th. And
I'm really looking forward to that one too. I think I've said that before, but that just sounds like interesting Canadian historical little bit by the makers of Flashpoint and some of the same cast as Flashpoint.
Yeah, I got to moderate that panel at the Canadian International Television Festival, and we got a chance to see the first trailer. And I had thought originally that they were going to be spending a lot of time at Camp X and over, you know, here in Canada. But it turns out that most of the time is spent overseas behind enemy lines with these spies. They are going to show some of the training and kind of jump back and forth. But basically, it's going to be 80% in Europe behind enemy lines and 20% back in Canada, showing the training that these guys get. And it's pretty interesting. The lead actor, he has a photographic memory, or he sees numbers and things as different colors. So he's a brilliant guy, but he also suffers from this real life condition that actually executive producer and co-creator Stephanie Morgenstern suffers from, where things that, you know, like I said, are seen as colors. So
like synesthesia?
That's the word. Thank you. I'm so glad that you when I said it on the panel.
My Psych 101 came in handy there.
Okay, so maybe you should explain it then. What is it exactly?
No, I mean, I think you did. I think it's when you sense one sense as another sense. Like, I think there's different ways it can manifest, but the one that I keep hearing is that you see, like, I don't know, numbers as colors, or, you know, those kinds of things.
It's kind of like when I watch reality programming and I taste vomit in my mouth.
Exactly.
I thought you were going to say you saw red.
No, it's much more affecting than that. Yeah, it's not just seeing red.
So you know, because he suffers from this, he's very good at being a spy because he's attuned to you know, small details, but also it's just kind of, you know, imagine, you know, being shot at and those loud sounds and explosions and things like that kind of messing with your mind. So it should be very interesting to see. Mr. D is coming back for a fourth season, and that is going to be on January the 20th. And then, of course, we've got new episodes of Murdoch Mysteries and Dragon's Den and Heartland in 22 minutes. One of the things I wanted to mention to you guys, though, is this kind of buried in the press release, is this four-part crime drama, Chasing Shadows, on March the 23rd. And we had one of the readers of TVA contact me and say, what is this? And it turns out that it's an ITV drama, so an acquisition from England.
Right.
It's a cop drama, so very interesting to see how that one does. Yeah.
Wow, a cop drama in Canada.
A cop drama.
That's shocking. Yeah. Wow.
Is it like cop rock, I wonder?
I just have to give CBC props, though, that they didn't create new cop dramas.
Mm-hmm.
They just imported one that already existed.
Like, yeah.
That's different for Canadian TV.
Well, I would rather see an imported cop drama at this part than come up with a new one.
Well, just, that's what I'm saying. I'm
yeah, like, because I think about
thank
some
God
of the,
you didn't make another yeah, drama.
I think about a show like Luther, which is such a fantastic oh, show. Okay. And I'm not saying that this is going to be like Luther, but at least they're finding new ways to kind of be a little bit daring in the UK with cop dramas these days.
Yeah, this...
I'm watching The Fall, which is really creepy and good.
Oh, yeah. Really good. Are you watching the second season now?
Yes.
Okay.
Not through entirely official means, but yes.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. No. So this Chasing Shadows. So this will be the third import so far in CBC's season, because they aired the Australian drama Secrets and Lies, which Fox has remade for mid season in the U.S. And then Janet King, which is just finishing up this week on CBC, and then Chasing Shadows. So these international dramas.
They had The Honorable Woman too.
Oh, The Honorable Woman. Yeah. Yep.
Jake's sister.
Yeah. The other thing I just want to note, and Diane, you weren't here a couple weeks ago when we noted this, but this has become a thing now. If nowhere else, it's become a thing here. If you'll scroll down to the bottom part of the press release into the second paragraph of the about statement.
Oh, dear.
Greg will notice.
A space for us all.
A space for us all.
Anthony, when I went to CBC for the Schitt's Creek interviews, I mocked that to all the publicists, and they did not appreciate it. No, we all had a good laugh over that. So yeah,
it's such a cheesy little statement to have in your about us thing. And also, I mean, they've been doing layoffs, and on Twitter, somebody kind of was using that like a space for us all except for me, because they got things left. So I don't know. I think you kind of got to be careful how you market yourself in these.
There are some empty spaces at CBC. Is that what they're saying?
Well, yes. And there's, a very high profile one recently. There's not a space for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But what I don't see, so the space for us all thing 2 weeks ago when we were looking at a couple press releases seemed to be tied to the specific initiatives that they were doing with the shows they were promoting. On this press release, they're just telling a bunch of dates for shows that they've already announced. But there's nothing to do with a space for us all.
Well, I mean, I think it should be something that's internal rather than external. But it's kind of their branding thing. They want to modernize them. And I think what they're saying is, look at the shows that we're doing. Like Strange Empire was sort of our first signal that they were trying to do something different. I think just from the descriptions, Schitt's Creek, Book of Negroes, X Company, like they're trying to do something that's a little bit different from what they've done before. How much success they're going to have is questionable, because we've talked before about ratings not exactly following some of their daring programming moves. But, yeah, I think A Space for Us All is just like it's their 3 or 5 year strategy title, whatever. I can't remember how long it is, but
well,
it's
it's like a vision mission statement claim, right? I mean,
it's their strategic and operational plan, basically. Yeah. I think it's a mistake to make it hugely public, because it just lets us mock them for it.
Like when I read between the lines in this paragraph here, it says it will increase its investment in primetime television programming and continue to create radio programs of the highest quality while promoting development of digital and mobile platforms and content. When I read increase its investment in primetime television programming, and I know that the budget is being slashed, the question begs to be asked, which is, what are they cutting?
Well,
is it everything else? Because if you're going to increase your investment in primetime and your budget's being slashed, I don't know where that money's coming from unless you're going to sacrifice a whole bunch of other stuff.
It's a very good question. And I think asking for specifics, when all they want you to focus on is their little shiny...
A space for us all. A space for us all.
Anthony, it's just a space for us all. They're going to do everything for everyone. That's what they're going to do. Just don't question.
I will not question. CBC is a space for us all. I will not question.
Anthony's one of those rare folks out there that likes to read boilerplates and read the in-depth stuff. This is the stuff that I don't even read anymore.
I was going to say, after the 30, you're not supposed to read anymore.
Yeah.
That's right.
But you can ask Diane. I've been doing that for 3 years now.
Yes.
All right. another announcement coming to us from Shaw, and it's about Showcase and Lost Girls Season 5, Part 1 premieres December 7th, which is this upcoming weekend. What a shock. Sunday night at 9, when everything else in the world is on.
Yeah, that's true. Well, now that The Walking Dead just had its mid-season finale, that's one empty time slot.
And Boardwalk Empire's done.
Yeah. But you're right. Sunday nights are so packed. So I'm not really sure why they're sticking this on here on Sunday nights, especially because it's such a big show for Showcase. I mean, people have been waiting for the new season. This is the last season, of course. I don't know why they're putting it on Sunday nights. Especially because they can put it anywhere, because they're not airing it day and date with Sci-Fi, so they can do anything with it that they want to.
Now, they're announcing here some of the guest stars that they have coming up for the final season. So the first one they announce is Eric Roberts.
Yes.
Wow, that was quite a reaction.
Come on. He's over the top. He fits perfectly in this genre.
You're a big fan of American Ninja?
I tweeted out something like, I love to hate him.
Like, yes.
He just does the chewing scenery so well.
Yes, he does.
He will probably literally chew on some of the scenery. And the...
Probably. I mean, there's that, you know, he's a little bit crazy. So it's that edge of watching him and how crazy he will be.
Yes, indeed.
Plus, Julia's brother.
That's true.
It freaks me out that they kind of look alike, even though she's pretty and he's very, very, very not.
He's not.
Very, very, very not. So they talk about the guest stars, the fact that they've got so they're talking about season 5, part 1. So already they've divided the season up into two.
Right.
I forget. Did they have an expanded final season, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I think it's...
Is it 18 episodes or 20 episodes?
I think it's 18. Yeah, 18 sounds right to me.
Okay. Because I know that their normal run was normally 13, I think, and so I don't know if that expanded in season 4, but I think the first three seasons were 13 episodes each, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah. So they supersized this one, so it's coming back on the 7th, and then they've already announced actually this afternoon that the mid-season finale is going to be on Sunday, January the 25th. So not that many weeks between, and then you figure because of the Christmas holidays, there might be a Sunday or two in there where they don't air it. So we're probably going to get maybe 5 episodes before it goes on its mid-season hiatus.
Yeah. They're gonna probably do their first half season arc and then maybe use the second half of the season to wrap up first 8 episodes, it looks like. So there you go.
Yeah.
So this is a show for the first 3 seasons I watched consistently. I lost the timing. Now I forget if they showed it Sunday at 9 o'clock last year, that could be one reason I didn't watch it, because I can only record so many things on Sunday at 9 o'clock.
Is that what you? So that's the only reason you stopped watching it?
Well, and I haven't stopped. Like, I do want to watch season 4.
Yeah.
I haven't given up on it. I do want to watch season 4. But now I have to watch season 4 before I watch season 5. That's the only thing. So
it's interesting. Not to go too far off topic, but you're not the demographic. So what is it about the show that you like?
Why would you say he's not the demographic?
Yeah, I'm kind of a sci-fi fantasy guy, eh?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Are you saying it's for women?
Well, it seems to trend that way. You know what?
It stars a hot woman.
Right.
I don't think there's a mystery why some fantasy guys would be.
But to say, and don't get me wrong, to me this, while this is no Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's in the same field essentially.
Right.
And I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, don't get me wrong, this ain't, you know, it's not Joss Whedon to me, because Joss Whedon is. Yeah, I put him up on Mount Rushmore a lot of the time, but for the most part, I really enjoyed this show. I enjoyed the tone of it. They found great pacing in the episodes and really good tone between campy, actiony, and all of that stuff. Like, that's a very personal, subjective note too. But it's one of those things where, it could have very easily gone way too over the top campy, and right. I would have found it juvenile,
right.
But it didn't quite go there for me.
Okay.
It just held back enough that I thought, you know what, it's a romp basically. It's like a 42-minute long kind of fantasy romp that I couldn't sit back and enjoy and watch once a week.
Cool. Yeah. No, I wasn't trying to allude that you, because you're a guy, that you shouldn't be watching it. Actually,
I think you were questioning my masculinity.
No, honestly.
Fight.
I think we're gonna have to throw down in Toronto at some point.
I love how Diane's just egging it on. What I meant was, I'd like to know what the demo is. Like, is it 20-year-old women? Is it like what's the? I don't know. I don't know what the demographic is. I would love to know what it is, because
I bet at some point they have sent us out a press release that parses it, like that it's the number one show for women between like 19 and 21 and a half.
Right.
I'm sure they have done that at some point.
I think the way you got to break the show down, though, is first of all, you got to look at it as, all right, who are the people who are into the sci-fi fantasy stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Then age doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
Now, when you step outside of that demographic, or the people that like that genre, who is drawn to it? And if you were to make the argument to me that younger women are drawn to a show that might be outside of their demographic because of the lead characters, I'd probably buy that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people who are already into the sci-fi fantasy demographic are, I think they're going to watch it no matter what, because to be honest with you, you know, there's not as many new shows as there used to be. I mean, there were times back in the 80s and 90s where you would have the 65 different Stargate incarnations and Babylon 5 incarnations and Star Trek and all of that stuff. We do have quite a bit of sci-fi now, but it's all 13 episodes. Like, we used to have 22-episode seasons of Stargate Atlantis and Stargate this and Babylon 5 and Star Trek this. It's not as easy to find a long-running sci-fi fantasy series anymore.
I'm just looking at the numbers. Okay, so I need to apologize to you, Anthony, because it ranked as the number one series on the channel, adults 25 to 54, number one scripted series of all specialty channels, adults 25 to 54. The sophomore season maintained a strong performance, 5% audience growth in the males 25 to 54 demos over season one. So there you go.
I will say that Anna Silk is not hard on the eyes.
No, that's true.
Okay, now we're coming back to what my point was.
Yes.
I need to shut up and watch the show, in other words.
Yeah. I'm not saying you need to shut up, but, you know,
watch the show. It's a fair point.
No, I think I do.
Yeah.
It's a fair point. But yeah, this has changed a lot. I think when we first started doing this podcast, though, I used to say that if there was a sci-fi fantasy show, those sci-fi fantasy nerds would just watch it because there weren't that many of them, and so there weren't that many shows, and so people would just glom onto it no matter how bad it was. That's really changed over the past several years. You know, there's so many sci-fi fantasy shows.
But they're shorter seasons now, though.
Well, true, yeah. But I just feel that it's not like the crap rises to the top just because it's the only thing there anymore.
That's
right,
it's,
right.
Which is, I feel like that's how it was for a little while way back.
In fact, I would argue that the shorter seasons are oftentimes making them better shows.
I think you're right.
Yeah. I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't watch Lost Girl, and yet I watch Grimm, I watch Haven, I watch Battlestar Galactica, I watch the Stargate franchise, so, I mean, this stuff should be right in my wheelhouse, and yet I don't watch it, so I'll tune in.
There you go.
It has hot girl making out with another hot girl. So
I know.
I think that's like, you know. That's a good sales feature.
That's just, I know, right? That's a no-brainer.
I'm sure there's other things. It's not really, I'm not one of the sci-fi fantasy fans, so it's not really in my wheelhouse, but I think it's well done for what it is. How's that?
There you go.
We probably
use the term wheelhouse more than any other podcast of it.
Yeah, and I don't use that word a lot, but sometimes it's, you know.
I was impressed when you said it.
Yeah.
The one thing I did want to say, one final thing before we move on, is that what will be interesting about this last season of Lost Girl is that now that Emily, is it Andress? Is that how you pronounce her last name? She's not the showrunner this season. They've got two new showrunners. So I'm interested in seeing and hearing from fans about whether there's a tone difference in the show without her around.
Yeah. Right.
Now I do have in the can, and we're sometime over the holidays, I have a discussion with a friend of mine, Doug Slater, who is one of the set designers on the show. And so that will be a good one to play kind of in the middle of the show's run. Because it starts on December 7th. So if we played over the holidays, kind of somewhere around the mid of the first part of the season, hopefully we can, I'll put that episode out and people will be able to hear a little bit about his perspective because he's been working on the show for the past three seasons, I think.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so.
You've been doing great things with that alternate TVA podcast.
I'm enjoying it and I'm hoping that people are enjoying it too. I'm the type of podcaster that doesn't track how many people listen, so I have no idea if anyone's listening, but I'm having fun.
Well, I was going to say, I think, you know, we're the ones who have the stats. And I mean, people are listening and we're getting comments and I find it very entertaining. And I think it's a great way to get a bit more in depth than we generally are able to get when we do, you know, some of the printer views, yeah, as we like to call them.
I just get so sick and tired of the two minute interview snippets that television affords these days.
Yeah. Well, Greg and I have kind of bitched about this offline, but, you know, you go to some of these junkets and they give you maybe 15 minutes, but sometimes they put the whole cast with you for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's just no way to do justice to that kind of interview because you either feel like a complete asshole because you're not really interested in everyone. Like, you need to focus if you've only got 15 minutes. But, you know,
if I was ever put in that situation, the only thing I could ever think about doing was going completely off book and just asking total questions that none of them would have been asked that day.
Yep. And that's exactly what I did for Schitt's Creek because I got the four cast members all at once and I was given 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I have Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, two legends of comedy, and I have 10 minutes to talk to them. So that's basically what I did. You just go off book and you ask questions that you don't think that they've ever been asked, at least during that day, and you just hope for the best. And actually, Eugene Levy told the publicist afterwards that I was one of the ones that asked the best questions. So I felt quite good about myself that day.
Nice.
I did not cry myself to sleep that night.
That's very good.
So Eugene Levy, I would go, so I went to McMaster as well, Eugene.
I told him I had two left feet, too.
Oh, there you go. So Lost Girl, Season 5, Part 1, December 7th, a day that will live in infamy.
Whoa.
9 p.m. No
pressure. You might be giving it a little too much.
Well, that's what December 7th is.
What?
A day that will live in infamy.
Because
Don't
of Lost
you know
Girl?
Your history, Diane?
Because of Lost Girl?
No. That was Pearl Harbor Day.
No, I don't know. I don't know those dates off the top of my head.
Ask her about space. Ask her about NASA. Ask her about Apollo.
Ask me when the first test flight for the Orion that is going to be their first deep space mission in a long time.
Ask her about Apollo from Battlestar Galactica.
Exactly.
Richard Hatch.
Wow, you went to old school.
That's right, I did. I watched the old Battlestar Galactica. Rest in peace, Glenn A. Larson.
Oh, Glenn A. Larson.
Oh, yeah. That was recent, wasn't it?
Yes. We talked about that on the Best Episode Ever podcast last week. So I believe Steve Fagey, I think his name is, from Montreal, if I'm not mistaken.
Fagestein?
Well, his website. Oh. Yeah.
I didn't know it was pronounced that way. Yeah,
I think it is because he was actually interviewed on Canada Land, Jesse Brown's Canada Land, and I think that's how he pronounced it. I certainly don't do my research, so I wouldn't know off the top of my head. But he put a long blog post together, and when I say long, it's long.
It's very long.
24 myths, and he doesn't shortchange any of the 24.
24 myths about the CRTC, television, and Netflix.
So Greg is going to do a dramatic reading of the whole thing now.
I love that. Well, you know what I can do? I can hang on for a sec.
Sure.
Oh, you haven't done this for a while. Whoa. What is that? The Hinterland Who's Who.
That was my Hinterland kazoo. I love how the blog post is encapsulated at the top by a grim looking JP Blais.
That's right.
With a pen
he looks like he's staring disapprovingly at me.
He is.
I think he pretty much stares disapprovingly at the world, to be honest with you. So these are myths that he's putting forward, and there's a bunch of them, which, you know. There's a couple of them that I completely agree with. There's a couple of them that I somewhat agree. I agree with most of them, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like the very first one, abolishing the CRTC would be the best move for consumer choice. No! A weak CRTC is what's causing the silos to begin with.
And I think people, he gets into some of the other myths about people not knowing what the CRTC does. And I think it's people who don't know exactly what the CRTC does who believe this most strongly. As in, they just think if you abolish it, free market prevails, all is well in the world. And they kind of don't get, I mean, you know, the US has the FCC too. Like, if you don't regulate the airwaves, chaos will descend.
I think a lot of people honestly think that the CRTC wants the system we have now, as opposed to has just passively sat back and allowed the system we have now. And I think that's the difference. Like, the CRTC has not exercised enough of its will. That's the problem that we're facing.
It's done slightly more in the last few years, but, you know, I was quite disheartened with the September hearing as well, which I think is the impetus for this blog post is, you know, there was a lot of discussion around those September hearings, and, you know, a lot of it, I mean, he calls them crazy ideas. Some of what he says is a myth is his opinion. It's not actually a myth. So, you know, some of it is, you know, he's predicting what would happen if certain things came to pass. And, you know, a lot of people make those same predictions and come up with different results. So, you know, I take some of it with a grain of salt. But I think for the most part, it's, you know, the things CRTC gets blamed for are kind of ridiculous.
Like hockey blackouts.
Yeah,
and that we can't watch American programs online and those kinds of things.
Like, a lot of this is general topics that we've been talking about on the podcast for many years in different forms. It's interesting that he's compiled them all together, and it comes in the wake of the hearings that we talked about a couple of months ago. If you get down to number 23, he talks about the myth that Netflix is not a broadcaster. So he's talking about the fact that it says, what is clear is that the definition of broadcasting is not limited to over-the-air AM, FM, and TV transmission. Any telecommunication of programs to the public is broadcasting. So he's making the argument that Netflix is a broadcaster. I don't necessarily agree with that. I'm not saying it doesn't agree with the definition that he's come up with in the Broadcasting Act. I just don't necessarily think that it should be considered broadcasting, but that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, something that I got into a little Twitter spat with the Writers Guild about is they didn't seem to understand that YouTube has gotten into original programming either. Mm-hmm. Like, Google has gotten into original programming.
And Yahoo, too.
And, you know, Amazon and, like, all of these other ones. And so, you know, one of the points in this post is something about, you know, the CRTC's decision to erase basically Google and Netflix's testimony was, well, he just mentions Netflix, they did it to Google as well, but he says that it's a myth that it was an immature act of willful blindness, and he gives reasons for why he says that, but actually, you know, they didn't have to, like, pretend that it didn't happen. Like, they scrubbed it from the website. They gave presentations and they scrubbed it from the website because they didn't, you know, follow up with the data that they requested, which does actually seem like a willful act of blindness and childishness, but whatever. Again, that's opinion. But, you know, if you're going to say Netflix isn't a broadcast, or it's a myth that Netflix isn't a broadcaster, you have to include things like Google, Yahoo, Amazon, etc. Crackle. Like, there's all kinds of things that are broadcasting by this definition that the CRTC isn't even looking at yet.
This is broadcasting then.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is.
And I would argue that that podcasting is not broadcasting. People have to select it. People have to choose it. And to me, that's what the operative definition of a broadcaster should be, not the technology that's used to transmit the data, but the element of choice into whether a constant stream is going out or not. If we did web radio, then I would argue, that's broadcasting, because people could go onto a website and at any time they wouldn't have a choice as to what they were listening to. It would just be they'd pick it up wherever we were in the broadcast. In this case, they're actually picking. And so, anyway, a lot of stuff on the CRTC. I would recommend you go there. We're going to have some links in the show notes. Go and check that out. There's some good information on here, and it's got some very useful linking, deep linking to other sites and to places where he's making reference to. So that can be useful as well.
And I think in general, if you're interested in things like the CRTC and all the wonky side of television that we dip into sometimes, but yeah. we don't necessarily know exactly what we're talking about half the time, this is a good blog to follow for that. So it's blog.fagstein, F-A-G-S-T-I-E-N.com. There's also cart.ca, that's C-A-R-T-T.ca, and yes. there's others that I am going to forget and people will be mad at me. But, you know, there's, I mean, Kelly Lynn Ashton has her own blog as well, who explains some of these things. So, yeah, you know, I think he's I don't mean to like dismiss his opinions. He's got reasons to have the opinions he has, and he has a very factual base from it. It's just that, you know, taking it as the gospel is not necessarily what I like to do.
Exactly. I don't like gospel of anything, to be honest with you. I like the gospel of bourbon. If I was going to go by anything, that would be the gospel of bourbon. I've actually got I've got an order in right now. They're having some vintage bourbon brought into Ontario from the States at $130 a pop.
Oh,
whoa!
Yeah, I put in an order for it. But if they have too many orders, they essentially raffle it. They do like a sweepstakes kind of thing. So I'm waiting.
You buy all this bourbon and you never drink it on air.
No, I don't drink it on air. I sometimes have a sip.
Someday we're going to have to have celebratory.
You know when I have a sip? I sometimes have a sip. I have sips occasionally when I'm doing the ABC's podcast.
Oh, well, yes, that counts.
Yes, yeah.
Counts. By the end, he's slurring his words.
I don't know what you're talking about, Greg. She was saying that I was calling into question my masculinity because I watched Lost Girl. I will end you. From digitaltrends.com, Netflix CEO says broadcast TV will be dead in 16 years.
Shoot, I had 15 in the pool.
I know, I had the over-under on 13, but apparently
somebody needs to like collect all the headlines that talk about when TV is going to die. Because somebody's going to get it right at some point. I mean, maybe it'll be in like 2095 or something, but somebody's going to get this prediction right because they've been predicting it for years.
Well, TV is not going to be dead.
Broadcast TV is what broadcast he's talking TV. About. Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. Broadcast TV is not going to be dead. It's going to morph.
Sure.
It's going to run on the continuum to whereby the definition of broadcast that I was just talking about in terms of that there are going to be fewer and fewer channels that offer up a constant stream versus channels that offer up a choice stream. That's really what it's going to come down to. And for the most part, you're going to be able to, so say you tune into CNN or the Weather Channel or CBC News Network. As soon as you tune it in, it will show you the beginning of a 10-minute package because that's when you've tuned into it. As opposed to you catching it on minute 7 of the 10-minute package.
Right.
I can see that happening very easily. So, I mean, I have no doubt that that's what's going to happen, and that'll be the easier way to do it. And if that means that – if that's how he's defining the end of broadcast TV, okay, I guess I can buy that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's still going to be the same style of content. It's still going to be the same concepts that get done in terms of narrative and storytelling and all of that stuff. It will just mean that people will get to pick and choose whenever they want to watch it, which isn't bad. You know, it would be nice. It would be nice to not have to PVR stuff, to be able to just walk in the door at 10:15, and whatever show start at 10 o'clock, just start watching it then without having to PVR it. Just say, yeah, let me start watching that now.
Yeah, and I mean, I find it interesting that, you know, given all the predictions about how, you know, broadcast TV is going to die, and I mean, they've been happening since before I started the TVA website. I mean, I was going to the Mount TV Festival and hearing that, you know, however long ago that was now, 8-9 years ago, and that was old news then. But things have changed. I mean, cable has taken more precedence. There's more, you know, on-demand kind of services. There's Netflix making original programming, Amazon making original programming. And the experimentation with that programming has been actually very little, other than being able to push some boundaries in terms of content, language, you know, nudity, and just, you know, sort of darker content. But Netflix, for example, they don't have time constraints. They don't have commercial breaks. And yet, you know, they write House of Cards, for example, in, you know, it's the same kind of act structure that a TV show would have if it was on HBO. And it's the same length that a TV show has. I mean, they can vary it a little bit, but for the most part, these are, you know, it's like an hour-long TV episode. They're not doing anything dramatically different in terms of structure. So in a way, I find it almost irrelevant how this content is going to be delivered to us. You know, people want to watch good shows. You know, if it's The Good Wife on broadcast TV, yay. If it's, you know, whatever on cable, what do I watch that's on cable? The Fall, that's on cable, great. Or if it's on Netflix, yay. But the delivery mechanism hasn't actually changed TV all that much.
I thought you were going to keep going on that.
I bored you into silence.
No, I thought you were going to keep going on that. It sounded like you hadn't hit your crescendo yet.
Oh, sorry. I just kind of end when I.
But I agree. That's the problem that's happening is that the delivery device of the content is changing for some people. In other words, we've got this younger generation mostly. Of people who are consuming content on mobile devices, on tablets, on laptops, all of that stuff. But for the most part, there is still this huge swath of people that are consuming content on their television screens. And until that default gets called into question, why would you change the formula of the way that the content is constructed? The content's constructed for a television screen. No matter how you get it on your television screen, it's still a television screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so until it changes to the point where somebody who's creating the content can think to themselves and go, holy crap, only 20% of the people are actually watching our shows on television anymore. Everyone else is watching it on tablets, computers, mobile phones. Until that idea changes, then I don't think we're going to see too much different. That's going to be a slower evolution in terms of narrative style and stuff like that. Because there's a lot of opportunity right now. I mean, there was, you know, I was just listening to a recent episode of the Limited Release podcast where they talk about web series. And one of the web series they were talking about, you can basically pick and choose what order you want to watch the webisodes in.
That's so kind of cool.
Yeah, so I mean, like, they have 30 different ones that are a few minutes each, and you can choose whichever order you want to watch them in. Different tracks to kind of tell the story in a different way. You don't do that on television. It's because that ain't going to change in a long, long while. There's still this concern over the absoluteness of craft, and this is how we are putting our product out, and this is what it will look like.
And a lot of web series are still, like, not all of them, but some of them are made so that you can push them together and have a 22-minute comedy on TV, for example, because a lot of creators are still hoping that they will make the jump from web to TV, because TV is still where the money is right now, whether it's, you know, Netflix or TV or whatever. But it's really hard to monetize something that's just a web series that's, you know, doled out in 3-minute chunks or whatever it is. So, you know, I think we've seen a lot of experimentation, and that experimentation hasn't led to a new paradigm, to use another like 10-cent word. But I find it interesting times, because things have changed quite a bit since, you know, my younger days, but it's still, the content doesn't feel that different.
Well, the McLuhan quotation that we have at the beginning of the theme of this podcast is, the content of the new media is always the old medium. The idea of having that quotation was that the fact that we're doing a podcast, but we're talking about television. That even though Netflix is a thing, it's still serving up television and movies. Like, it's not...
It's
a new delivery device. If you want to call it a new medium, you can call it a new medium, but it's still only serving up the old style of content.
Right.
Right. Which is much in the same way that all the stuff that you read online is still very much still structured after newspaper stories, newspaper articles. You know, people are bemoaning the fact that BuzzFeed is doing these, you know, stupid little 200-word posts, but that's the first real shift that we're starting to see away from, you know, the New York Times feature article on this. And, you know, blog posts have actually driven the change in the written word. It'll be interesting to see when that actually gets done on television, if it happens. So anyway, I feel like we've already thought ourselves out and we still have an article left. Oh, dear God. From the National Post this week, and it is an interesting thought. This comes to us from David Barry from the National Post. from his fuel for the fire segment section, where he claims Brent Butt's Corner Gas may not be the show we want, but it's what Canadian TV needs. Greg, we were talking about the fact that they're going to do the super simulcast of the Corner Gas movie. And the basic premise of this article, I think I kind of agree with that. I don't know if I agree with the whole idea, but I think the concept seems to be that we all are screaming for some bold new vision in Canadian television, but ultimately it's not necessarily the bold new vision that catches on.
Yeah, and I mean, like we talked about before, this with this movie coming out and being in movie theaters and then being super simulcast on CTV and CTV2 and the Comedy Network. Yeah, we want change, but we still like the old stuff. You know, Corner Gas was a record-breaking show on CTV for 6 seasons, and then it moves on to the big screen, and people, we're going to find out very quickly whether people still love the brand or not. But yeah, it is kind of interesting, this piece saying, yeah, we want change, but not too much change, and we're quite willing to go back to this show that we watched, you know, haven't seen in 6 years. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but my cat is playing with something behind me.
That's your cat? Wow.
Yeah.
Let me guess. You got one of those things. You got one of those circles on the floor with the ball that's stuck.
Yeah, that is exactly. Yeah. Wow. So I'm going to, while you guys talk about this, I'm going to go over and get him off of this. So I will.
Don't beat him, Greg.
Beat the cat. And it's time for another new exciting game show, Beat the Cat.
No. That's funny. At our hotel room in Quito, Ecuador, there were 3 little cats living on the roof, and we had this like strange hotel room that you had to like go upstairs, and then we were actually above the roof, and yeah, so there was 3 cats there. So I got my cat fix even while I was away.
That
we just talked about cats while you were gone.
Oh, okay.
No. Diane talked about cats while you were gone.
Well, okay, but Anthony was chanting "Beat the Cat," so I had to go in with a semi-cute story about cats. But what I was going to say about Corner Gas is I find this an interesting article. I mean, I don't exactly disagree with it. That, I mean, you know, all the talk about wanting Golden Age and wanting, like, even me saying that I love Strange Empire for signaling that CBC is doing something different. And that different means taking a risk and reaching and going for something that's a little strange and experimental and, you know, dark and that kind of thing. But it's not getting great ratings. What gets great ratings is things like Dragon's Den. But I find this slightly odd in that it seems to have forgotten that there were a lot of Corner Gas knockoffs that came after Corner Gas's success. So there were things like Men with Brooms and what else was there? The Hiccups and, I mean,
the Prairie Homespun Comedy?
Yeah, there was an attempt to make the next Corner Gas. There was an attempt to harness it both in the sort of tone, the small town Canadiana, and also by using some of the same characters.
Yeah.
And they didn't ever get the success that Corner Gas did. I mean, sometimes a show just lands with an audience and you can try and pick apart why and try and reverse engineer it, and it's just not going to work. So it's great to say that Corner Gas is the kind of thing that should be relatively easy to produce here, but no TV is relatively easy to produce here and make a success. That's true whether it's Canada or the States. I mean, it happens in the States all the time. You get a Friends that is this breakout success, and then you get all these weak imitators of it, and they just don't land the same kind of audience. So pointing to one show that was a great success, I mean, you know, it's armchair quarterbacking that doesn't really understand the television industry. It's great to say, yes, let's make more Corner Gas. They tried and nothing landed.
Yeah. I don't know. I also think that these days, a breakout show is going to be largely based not just on ratings, but on buzz. And if you make something that is large, I think the implication is here is you have to make something that's somewhat homogenous in order for it to have this widespread appeal. The trouble is when they made Corner Gas, buzz wasn't as important as it is today. And I don't think you get buzz on a homogenous product today. I think that you need something a little bit more daring, and that may be going against the grain of what this article is saying.
Well, and I also think, I mean, I think they're too, they're not mutually exclusive, but you can have the buzzy show. And this was like years ago. This was like probably over 10 years ago. But I talked to Bill Lawrence, who did Scrubs, and he was saying that nowadays, with the fragmentation of audience, you need to be a cult show. You just need to be a show that this devoted audience is going to follow you wherever you go. And that's how you get success now. It's not going to be the, 20 million people. It's going to be this cult following that the network just can't get rid of you, basically. So I think there's that too, but I think in Canada they tend to disregard the rural audience and they want that sort of urban audience. Anytime something is only a success in Toronto and Vancouver and Montreal, like that's good news. But if something is only a success outside of those cities, it's not as appealing to advertisers. So Canadian Idol, one of the producers, made this big stink about how, people in Toronto really had to get on board and it wasn't fair that they weren't getting on board and cheering on their, people, because that show did okay ratings, but it did great ratings in rural areas, and that wasn't enough for the network. So I think that, that hurts them trying to get another corner gas too. But I think if you tap into that more rural audience base, you're probably going to have more success than if you just go for the whims of the cities.
I guess the advertisements for grain co-ops aren't as high as CIBC Wood Gundy.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I think we've talked a lot, haven't we?
I think we have, yes.
Based on five links alone, I believe we've talked a lot.
And I have to go pack for NASA.
Wow. Talk about trying to show us up. Holy crap.
I know, I'm not even leaving my basement in the next couple of
Yeah.
days.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like
I
I'm
have to
rubbing
go
it
pack
in.
for a bag of Cheetos.
I basically like I, I was off work for 2.5 weeks, and then I worked for a week, and then I'm gone for a week again, and then I work for 2 weeks, and then I'm gone for another week because I'm going away for Christmas, and
Oh,
I just feel like
man.
this isn't my normal life. Like, I don't mean to be bragging
Swanning
about this.
around.
Yeah, but I don't. I mean, for me, it's more like, what the hell is happening with my life? This is kind of interesting.
Diane,
Oh, I have all these holidays I have to take.
I know.
Oh.
I
International
know.
woman of mystery.
I accidentally left all my holiday time to the end of the year is what happened.
Accidentally.
I thought I got more than I thought, which made my boss say, "Are you complaining about how much holiday time you have?"
And you said, no, I'm going to go watch space happen.
I'm going to watch things go to Mars. Well, okay, not quite, but they're testing to go to Mars.
Greg, why don't you tell people where they can find you when you're not commiserating with us every couple of weeks here on the TVA podcast?
When I'm not locked in the basement, actually, when I am locked in the basement, you can find me on Twitter at Greg underscore underscore David. And when Diane's not around, or if I want to piss her off, I take over the TVA a Twitter account at TV underscore A.
You're always welcome to piss me off and take over that account.
You can
Excellent.
also find Greg at spinnycat.com.
Oh. Now he's playing with a mouse. Not a real mouse.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah.
Diane,
Good
where can we
clarification.
Yeah. Where can we find you, Diane, when you're not swanning around the country?
Well, I'm in my well, it's, I don't have a basement, but I'm curled up with my cats. Operating the TVA website with Greg at tv-eh.com, which is also on Twitter at TV underscore EH. And I'm on Twitter at DEEKAYW. So in the next, this week, you can follow that and hear about NASA Orion liftoff on Thursday.
Are you going to take pictures?
Yes,
Sweet.
part of it is it's social media accreditation, so I'm supposed to be posting and all of that. So I'll be doing whatever I can posting on social media.
Amazing.
Yeah, so where can you be found, Anthony?
You can find me on this December 1st, the Great Canadian National Day of Podcasting. You can find me at Anthony Marco on Twitter. You can find all the other podcasts I do at anthonymarco.com. And you can listen to me every other week on the TV ABC's podcast. By the way, I'm doing this on the fly. I apologize, but we did have another Patreon person.
Oh, right, that was while I was gone.
Yeah, so I'm going to quickly call up the our we've got a fourth Patreoner.
At some point, we should do the whole roll call again.
Yes, I can do the whole roll call again. So we have a Christopher A. Butler. We have Bram Abramson. We have Catherine Tom, and we have Doug Slater.
And I think it was Catherine who's the new one.
Yes, thank you very
But
much.
thank you.
Yes. it helps make us do something. I wish I had a nice little maxim that I could throw in there.
That was a great sales pitch. Yeah, that was perfect. You should work for the CBC, a space for all of us.
A space for us all.
Oh, yeah. Oops. See, I even got it wrong.
A space for all of us in here.
Except for the people we're laying off and firing for inappropriate behavior.
Which is apparently whatever we deem to be inappropriate. That's episode 171 of the TVA podcast, and that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.